You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Welcome to another edition of the Brews and the Boys podcast, produced by Shui Media and brought to you by way of Blogging the Boys, SB Nation, and the Vox Media Podcast Network. We are your friendly neighborhood show where we enjoy cold beverages and we love to talk about America's team, the Dallas Cowboys. Every week we'll be giving you an in-depth look into everything the Cowboys are doing and what to expect from the Cowboys. My name is Michael Sizemore. I've been following and writing about the Cowboys for many years and currently contribute to Blogging the Boys. You may follow me on Twitter at Mr. Sizemore. Follow the podcast at Brews and the Boys. And with me as always, he's the man of the hour. He's too sweet to be sour, folks. My colleague at Blogging the Boys and the Walter Matthau of my Jack Lemmon, Mr. Tom Ryle.
Yay!
Yes, and you can follow Tom at Tom Ryle BTB on Twitter. And we got to get down to it. We're a lot happier than we were bringing you last week's show because the Cowboys got a big win. I know there's a lot of these people don't like these must-win type of analogies here early in the season, but I kind of think, Tom, they needed that win. Every way it happened, they needed it.
Yeah, on several fronts. First off, falling to 1-3 this early in the season puts them in a pretty deep hole. Now all of a sudden they're right at the thick of things because they're tied with the Eagles again. Washington had a bye, and so they technically have a lead in the division, but it's much better shape than it had been if they'd fallen just a game behind. Unfortunately, right now nobody's taking with the NFC East. So that keeps them in the thick of things.
Yeah, and there's only been one NFC East game, and that was the Cowboys and Giants in week two.
So they got a leg up in that. So the big thing was that we may have seen solutions to many of the offensive woes they had. That was the big thing, was that you just saw so much going on. It's kind of like in the New York game. They seemed to check off a few things, but then they kind of got away from them. This one, they check them off and keep it alive.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
You saw. One of the big things that jumped out to me was that there were five plays that went over 30 yards from scrimmage.
Oh, man, I didn't even realize that.
Yes, there was the Zeke Elliott 41-yard run, and then they had four pass plays that got 30 yards. There was the Elliott one at the end of the game. There was his screen. There was one to Michael Gallup. And then there was the one to Jeff Swaim that is, what to me, one of the overlooked things, is that Swaim is very quietly becoming a reliable tight end.
Yeah, and we're going to get into a lot of that, of course. But we got to talk about, we got to talk about just in general the Cowboys, their game and everything. And I definitely want to spend some time on Dak Prescott because we need to do that. Uh-huh. But I want to start with how the game started. You saw the Cowboys come out and, they just three plays, Elliott, goes for a 1 yard and then he gets up the middle for eight and it's third and one. And you just say, okay, this kind of looks a lot of the same of what we've seen. And then when he trips up in the back, and then also Dak was getting criticism for not, taking that to the right side. It was, minus one, and then you're back to where you were with the Cowboys, and you're just saying, my gosh, like this team, first off, they want to run it always against on first down, and they want to run it against, eight or nine men in the box, and then you say, and now they, you know, now they don't want to, like, they're now they're punting again. But then you look at it, Tom, and you say, man, you look at the Cowboys, what really kind of impressed me, and there's still a lot of room to grow, but like you said, the Cowboys punted their first drive, but then they went and scored. They scored points on six of their drives. They had of their nine drives, they only had two punts, and one was a kneel down before the half. That is improvement, folks.
Yes, extreme improvement. And going back to that first sequence, the first three and out, they did not let that get to them. That was big. The play to Zeke Elliott was not an incorrect call. As you said, he tripped.
Yeah.
There was a little problem. One of the linemen, I didn't see exactly what happened, but it looked to me like one of the linemen got his leg in the way, maybe got pushed back a little bit. So they should have got the first down there and seen gone on, but they didn't. The defense put in a stop before it got to having its struggles during the game, and which really came down to just one factor. Well, two factors, I think. But then they came back, got some stuff going, and started hitting really on all cylinders. And Zeke was about six of the eight cylinders there.
Yeah, yeah. You start out with, you know, you talked about Jeff Swaim, and you start, like, their first drive for points, which was their second drive of the game, a seven plays, 76 yards and 2 minutes off the clock. But you start out with a play-action pass to Jeff Swaim, which, you know, we saw even in Dak's rookie year, he kind of liked hitting Jeff Swaim for those. He did it in the Cleveland Browns game. He hit Jeff Swaim for a nice big gain. And, you know, he knew that Witten at that time, you know, in his rookie year was not going to get 31 yards like Jeff Swaim did. But then you start talking right then, right after that, you know, it's first down. And then on, you know, he gets a first down immediately with a 31-yard pass to Jeff Swaim. Elliott runs right up for 7 yards, and you're thinking, my gosh. And then he hits Michael Gallup, finally hits Michael Gallup for a 37-yarder deep down the field. And you're like, my God, this team is probably going to get it together. And you know, then they ended up, you know, having a couple of miscues right there, one to Allen Hurns and one to Michael Gallup again. But they got the field goal, and that was a lot different than what we had seen before. So it was like, man, this team, you know, doesn't always get off to a decent start. You know, they got off to a decent start against the Giants, and then they went for a lull. This time there was no lull.
Yeah, and we forgot one thing that really, I was like, say what? They won the toss and deferred.
Deferred, yeah.
They finally have realized how you play football in 2018.
Yeah, you know. that was intense. When they deferred, I said, you know, and then Jason Garrett and Dak said something funny at the end of the game. They said, you know, we always want to defer, but we always lose the toss. And I was like, yeah, okay, yeah, right. You've won the toss a few times.
Always since when? Last Sunday? What?
Yeah, exactly, exactly. But you know, we got to give. First off, I want you to talk about, because I want to talk about Dak. I want you to talk about Zeke.
The only thing I think that can really stop Zeke right now is, one, the passing game goes away, so that basically they're putting, you know, 10 guys in the box and just stuffing.
Yeah.
And the other is going to be injury. He was, you know, limping a little bit, but they say he's going to be okay. You know, I don't want them to use him up too fast, but he is just, he's a great open field runner. He can get through traffic. He can make the cut and go. He's got good hands despite the drop he had last week. You know, he caught four, you know, four passes thrown to him. He caught all four of them. You know, two of them were huge, you know, the screenplay, which was one of the most beautifully blocked things I've seen in a long time, and set up beautifully with the motion in the opposite direction that got the defense flowing away from where the screen pass was. He had a huge lane down the sideline with three giant guys running in front of him, and kudos to Joe Looney. That was fast for a big guy.
Yeah, it was. It really was.
And then it looked like, and there'd been some talk. I was reading Bob Sturm, talking about the long pass at the end that set up the winning field goal that was so crucial. Prior to that, they'd had Zeke out in some patterns, and he was just running sloppy, ugly, half-assed, shall I say, pattern. And they're wondering, was that just what he does when he knows the ball's not coming to him? Or were they setting that up? Because when they put him out there on that play and he came out of the slot and what they call, some of they call that an inside fade, I think I heard it described as. He was obviously out there like, oh, I'm open, get me the ball. And it came in, he got his hands on it, brought it down, and I was just thinking, holy cow, what a big league catch. And big league there, but Elliott was, he was the focus of everything. You know, 152 yards on the ground, so he was keeping the running game alive, forcing them to respect that, which made the play, some of the play action work better. There's that myth about, oh, you don't have to actually run the ball well to make play action work. You just have to sell the fake. Well, I'm sorry. Teams have to respect what you can do, and they're going to be a little more alert to the run with a Zeke Elliott than they are with some back that's averaging 43 yards a game.
Yeah.
So, you know, it all was just working. The play action was getting set up. Zeke was rolling. Dak was feeling it. You know, which you're going to talk a bit about him.
Yeah.
But Elliott was the centerpiece. You know, I mean, my gosh, he's your leading rusher and he's your leading receiver.
Yeah.
what else can the guy do? I would like to see them keep him in the pass. I would love to see them, you know, cut back on some of his runs maybe, but throw him the ball a couple more times and, you know, just
show a
kind of different identity for the other teams to defend. Because I think if they can find a way to kind of morph from one to the other,
mm-hmm.
you know, come out and just almost pick the right game against the proper defense and just pass, with Zeke being a key part of that, and then come up against another team the next week, and Zeke gets 25 carries, okay,
mm-hmm.
make their heads spin. He is right now the fulcrum. He is
He's their best player. He's the best player on the field. He probably was the best player in general on that field that day.
That field?
That field.
How about all of them?
Yes, that's what I'm saying. Against the Lions, he is probably the most explosive player on the field for both teams. I mean, you can make an argument about Golden Tate.
Not both teams. I'm talking all 32.
Yeah, he's just that good at everything.
Because what I was about to say is he may have opened the official campaign for MVP this year.
Yeah, if he continues doing what he's doing right now, of course. And that's what I want to talk. I'll say something about Elliott, and then I want to get into Dak Prescott before we have to go to our break. And Elliott's, you know, 240-yard performance, it's the best outing of his 29-game career. Like, it's the best total because he had 88 yards in receptions, and he also, you know, set up that game winner, like you said. He had 152 rushing yards, which was his third best of his career, and it was only on 25 carries, which was his eighth most. So you talk about what he did. I mean, he was outstanding, and he didn't even, you know, 25 carries, that's about what you would expect from Elliott, and I think most people going into this season would expect more from Elliott each game than 25 carries. He had more touches than that. Obviously, he had about 30 touches, but in context, I want to say, as good as Elliott did, what he did was what he was supposed to do, because that was the NFL's worst rushing defense, and he just absolutely dominated them from start to finish. He had big runs all over this game. He had that run where he almost hurdled a guy. Even though Elliott, you know, saw eight or more in the box, he saw eight or more in the box on 32% of the time, which was the fifth most in week four. He just gashed him. I mean, he gashed him for 6 yards per carry. After, you know, gashing the Seahawks the week before that for 8 yards per carry and it not mattering, he gashed the Lions, and it certainly mattered. I mean, it was impressive, but like I said, that's what you expect from the league's leading rusher, and he is the league's leading rusher by almost 100 yards, about 90 yards. He is the league's leading rusher. So
yeah, it's not even close.
But I want to talk
about that was after a slow start.
Yeah, but these last six or so minutes before we go to break, I want to talk about what Dak Prescott did, because people are shortchanging it, and that's fine. They're shortchanging it by saying, well, the Lions' run defense is so bad that Dak could just do what he wanted to because, you know, their passing defense, nobody's tried to pass on him. BS. They have tried to pass on him because, guess what? If their running defense is that bad and everybody's just running on them, then Tom Brady, who has decent running backs, who he's made, you know, he's made them make a lot. He's made a lot of money for those running backs. They didn't have a great day against the Lions, and they had a terrible day passing, 133 yards for Tom Brady. What Dak Prescott did was not only fantastic, but it was right at the right time when he needed to do it, Tom. And it was one of the unlikeliest of feats because, as you look at it here, a good day in the NFL these days for offense, just a normal, like, hey, that was a good day, is 300 yards. You're talking about 200 from your quarterback and about 100 from your rusher. But anything over 400 is outstanding. The Cowboys had 414 yards of offense. That's something we hadn't seen before. You know, and passing for 200 yards, it's an expectation for quarterbacks, and Dak hadn't done it in the last five games. So on the surface, people can sit there and discount those 255 passing yards because it ranked about 18th for the week because there were five quarterbacks with over 400, you know, eight others had over 300. It wasn't the amount of passing yards though, Tom. And this is what I want people to understand. It wasn't the amount of passing yards getting that, you know, 255 and getting over the 200 yards. The composure, the poise that we've all been waiting to see, that return.
But I think everybody realizes that there were two crucial plays where there were mistakes and errors. You know, one of them was on the last drive when that ball got knocked out of Dak Prescott's hand, and he got to it, picked it up, ran to the right, and threw it away. They're in third and three instead of third and 18, third and 20, and possibly dead in the water. At least going to have to probably go to fourth down. And as you said, this was Dak Prescott had his best passing performance against the best pass defense he's faced.
Yes. I mean, and I have a column up right now that I'm, you know, grabbing some of these stats from called Dak Prescott saved his most aggressive passing performance for the Detroit Lions, who were his toughest matchup.
Yeah, I only steal from the best. And he was the perfect complement. That is what the Cowboys have.
Yes.
Is they have the balance. You can with some teams, you know you're getting a passing attack.
Yes.
With other teams, you know they're going to come out and run the ball. You don't see very many of them. With a lot of teams in the NFL, they don't do much of anything very well. So you just have to kind of watch out for it. The Cowboys, you know they've got the running game, and now you know that you've just seen Dak Prescott come out, hurt you deep, hurt you with some run after the catch plays, and you know he didn't use his legs was one thing they didn't really get into.
That's
this
the
week.
Only part of the offense they didn't use.
And I'm wondering, did they just kind of tuck that under the covers at a certain point and say we'll keep that for a little while later?
Probably, because they were doing whatever they wanted on the ground with Zeke and doing whatever, and pretty much. You know, we got to give a little bit of credit to these the receivers too. I still want to get back into this Dak stuff, but you talk about Cole Beasley. I said on Twitter, you know, it felt like Cole Beasley had a 100-yard game, but it was only 53 yards and four catches because every single catch he made was important.
Yes,
and he did it with. I mean, what was crazy to me is that he did it with like 1.6 yards in separation. That's what I looked at on Next Gen, and I was just blown away. Like, he's not getting any separation. They know they had to put Slay on him. They put Slay on him, and Cole still found a way to get the ball. That was incredible.
And and I think you saw that's one of the hidden things. You saw the receiving core take a step forward.
Yes.
They're not going to go out there and be in the argument for the best receiving core.
No.
But they are suddenly showing that they are a capable core, that he can get the ball to them. They're not catching everything, but they're catching a lot right now.
Yeah. And, you know, I hate to say it, Tom, but it is true. At the end of the game, Dak said it best. Guys, you know, when they asked about the wrinkles and all the wrinkles they put in, and he just said, guys, I just say those things to get y'all talking. He goes, we executed.
Yes.
We couldn't execute in Seattle. We couldn't execute week one against Carolina. We executed.
I've got an article coming up on the site that'll probably be out by the time people hear this.
Yeah.
That's the whole point.
Yes.
That was what changed. All of a sudden, the things the offensive coordinator were calling were working. Mm-hmm. And now they did throw some stuff. I don't think anybody can ever remember, at least since Dak and Zeke got here, Elliott going out of the slot on a deep pattern like that.
No, on a wheel route like that? No.
Yeah. That to me was just like, okay.
No.
And we're
right up against the break. So we'll take a break, Tom, and then we'll come back and we'll discuss more Dak Prescott and then get a little bit of Houston Texans at the end. This is the Brews and the Boys podcast. We'll be right back. We are back. Tom, sorry for cutting you off there. You were saying, you know, that wheel route that Zeke ran. I thought it was great that Dak just said, look, they put a linebacker on Elliott. We're going to take that every single day. Every single day.
And this is where Linehan did a really good job.
Yes, he did.
In matching up players and using his motion. Throwing out of, you know, I think.
Getting guys in motion. Getting people.
I think he threw out of a 13 set package.
Yes.
You know.
Uh huh.
So they're all bunched in, and okay, let's chunk the ball. Okay.
Yeah.
I love to see that stuff.
If you had any, we'll talk about the defense here in a minute. But if you had any gripes on offense, that one drive kind of was just like where they got down into the red zone. You're just kind of like, what are y'all doing now? What? Don't be cute. Just score here.
Yeah.
And then Dak takes that terrible sack that he should not have taken and he didn't have to take. And then the Cowboys ended up, having to punt there and stuff like, and that was just kind of dumb, but especially since the Lions had given them three penalties in a row that got them first downs, you kind of felt, but real quick, I want to get into a few things on Dak and then we'll move on and talk, defense and receivers if you would like to, Tom, but, talking about that aggressiveness, Scott Linehan, I did a post last week about the wide receivers and, how they, like you said, Tom, they kind of edited it down a little bit. They kind of, got receivers involved, but did not go crazy with like getting six and seven receivers in it and mm-hmm. changing it all up and stuff and not giving Dak a chance with these receivers. He just kind of had his steady core of guys that he would go to, and Tavon would have been one if he hadn't gotten hurt. But look at it. Dak's time to throw, it went down from the week before, so it looks like Dak is not trying to hold on to the ball as much. He was, he had 2.86 seconds to throw, which was eighth. His aggression percentage, I should say, what that is it's NextGen's way of determining how many passing attempts he made, your quarterback makes into tight windows with a defender that's 1 yard or less away from the target. And Dak had 48.1%. It was number one in the league by a country mile. This week. And the fact that he was taking aggressive shots, there was another thing that I thought was great, which was he had, after having a minus 14.4 completion percentage versus what he was expected to make last week, he had a plus 9.5. They only expected him to complete about 54% of his passes. He completed 64. So, he did a pretty good job. His passer rating was great. And then this was another big stat from Next Gen, Tom, is that they have that average yard to sticks ratio. He was averaging throwing 4 yards behind the sticks last week. He was hidden. Now this week he was throwing 3 yards past it. And then The last thing I wanted to say about Dak that was really impressive to me was the fact that they have this one of the best stats that I like looking at Next Gen, and I think that they're really on to something here at Next Gen. They've got some good stuff, is improbable completions. And that's where it considers everything from a receiver separation on the route to the air yards, and it gives the probability of that pass actually being completed. And Prescott only had 4 of improbable completions this entire season so far, and 3 of which came in this game.
Yeah.
12-yard curl to Allen Hurns, only had a 23% chance of making it, and he made it, and he fit it right there. The 34-yard wheel route that you're talking to Zeke Elliott that set up the game winner, that was on there. And then the 37-yard deep pass to Michael Gallup was on there. So like I said, Tom, the devil was in the details. Dak Prescott, he outgunned all the other quarterbacks that had come up against the Lions. He outperformed, you know, them, and he did it while Matthew Stafford was carving up this defense for over 300 yards and only 6 incompletions.
Yeah, and that's well, I want to say one thing. They say that confidence begets confidence.
Yeah,
and I think they got a lot of confidence this game. And if they can keep it going through the next game, then that's something that can roll through the end of the season and give them a real shot at going somewhere.
Well, Tom, did you hear about earlier in the week how Scott Linehan was working with Dak about get the ball out, get the ball out, get the ball out? You know, they had a Twitter picture that showed Scott, and they said, Scott Linehan's blitzing Dak. What is this about? He was blitzing Dak because he was trying to get him to get the ball out.
Okay. Yeah, I remember seeing the picture, but I didn't quite catch the context of that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, that's Scott Linehan has been beaten about the head, neck, and shoulders, and I've been guilty of pointing some fingers at him myself.
We all have.
But need to back up and look at what this happened. He got his players to play. He got his players to execute. You know, I quoted Brian Broaddus, who's been pushing that. Broaddus has been saying, wait a minute, it ain't all on Scott Linehan. There's a lot of other things that have to be fixed first.
Yeah.
And I think that is very true.
Yeah. And, you know, and about Scott Linehan, Tom, is that people need to realize that, you know, everyone wants to jump on him, but also but realize that Scott Linehan's been a coach, an offensive coach in this league for 16 years. And in 12 of them, he has had a top rated passing offense or rushing offense. One of the two.
Yeah.
So.
And it's going to be real interesting to see if it does go well for a while, how much it will quiet the voices now.
Yeah.
Like I said, real quick on the receivers, I pointed out in an article that you now basically got your five receivers, your tight ends, Jeff Swaim, obviously, and then you've got Cole Beasley, Allen Hurns, Michael Gallup. Who'd I leave out?
So you got Beasley. Your top receivers have been Beasley at 1, Zeke 2, Swaim, Deontay Thompson, Hurns, Tavon, Gallup, and
Okay.
Last, Terrence Williams.
That's right. I forgot that you got to count Elliott as your back. So you're going to have the 4 receivers are going to be Swaim, Hurns, Beasley, and Gallup. That is basically what your starting lineup is, regardless who they send out because of personnel package on the first play of the game.
Yeah.
Now they can look and see if they can get Tavon Austin worked in. But I think they're going to always keep him as a guy that's in on 30-40% of the plays at most.
Yeah,
to come in and be a bit of that change of pace thing. They can see if they've got anything with Jarwin or Gathers. But with Swaim, I think he's going to be carrying the load at tight end, kind of like Jason Witten was, only they won't always have him on the field the way they did Witten.
I just wish that they had another guy that can block, because I'm starting to see what Broaddus is saying. He's just getting beat up. Not that he's bad at it. He's just getting beat up in there, you know.
Who, Jarwin?
No, just Swaim.
Swaim, Jeff Swaim.
Yeah, he's just kind of getting beat up because the other guys can't really block as well.
Yeah.
So.
And that's kind of a shame. And I don't know how long they're going to keep the Rico Gathers experiment going unless they start getting something out of it. Because there was one play where they were running something and Rico was just kind of running this random path.
Yeah.
It didn't make any sense with anything.
I mean, yeah, I think I saw, like, Dak, like, make a twitch. Like, what are you doing? Like, No, that this is why I'm not going to you. Do you understand? And then when they got on the end zone and stuff, I know that Dak should have given him much more of a chance. That fade was a little bit off, but
he had a chance.
Yeah, he's Rico Gathers, guys. That's one thing that he's supposed to do.
Yeah, and if he'd gone up and grabbed that, we'd all have been like, okay, cool. We see what the plan is, and we understand. But yeah, it didn't work out.
We do have to – let's talk about this defense, though, a little bit, because I want to give some context to it. I think everyone's a little, you know, if anything, nobody's upset, but they're just a little if you're griping at anything, they're griping about how the secondary played. And I understand –
and you're basically talking two players that had a bad game.
Yes, exactly. Your safeties – and then Jordan Lewis, you know, like, didn't have a great game. Jordan Lewis has only had two snaps. Yeah. One of them was him tripping and watching Golden Tate run right by him for a 40-something yard touchdown. Yeah. And I heard from David Hellman that when they were in the locker room after the game, he was staring a 1,000-mile hole into the wall.
Yeah.
And I feel bad for him.
I do, too, because I don't know what's gone wrong with him after a really good rookie year, other than he just may not fit.
Rashard, I don't think that Rashard thinks he's aggressive enough. I don't think that Rashard, I think that Rashard thinks that he doesn't he doesn't always think, you know, before he makes, before he reacts.
And this might be something too, because it's kind of like Rashard said, okay, gonna put you out there, give you a chance. All right, get out of here.
Yeah, that kind of, when you only get a small chance like that, you can't make those mistakes.
Yeah. And Anthony Brown did not have a good game, and Jeff Heath did not have a good game.
Yeah, and Jeff
really
Heath just got, but he got blasted too a couple of times.
Like
Jeff Heath was getting taken out with a lot of these things I'd like to see the Cowboys do, which is rub routes and a couple of those what do you call them, pick plays?
Go ahead and say it, illegal pick plays.
Yeah, illegal pick plays that the Saints and the Patriots have just mastered. I'd love to see them do a little bit more, but probably they don't do as much because they know the receivers aren't going to get that respect from the officials. So, let's talk about the secondary real quick, Tom, about this, because I just want to give some context here. You know, the Lions offense, guys, is pretty good. I think y'all need to understand Matthew Stafford is one of the most prolific passers in the league. Yeah, he's thrown some interceptions, and he's kind of got like a little bit of a Brett Favre in him in that gunslinger mode. But you talk about the pace that his receivers are on right now. The Lions receivers are on pace for 3,808 yards, and that's just the top three. That's just Golden Tate is on pace for 1,500 yards and 12 touchdowns. Galladay, who they have claimed is now their new number one receiver, their ex, their guy that they lost with Megatron, he's on pace for 1,300 yards and 8 touchdowns. And Marvin Jones is on pace for 932 yards and 8 touchdowns. Yeah. So you're talking about 28 touchdowns and almost 4,000 yards between three guys. They already, last year, the Lions already had two 1,000-yard receivers in Marvin Jones and Golden Tate. And you talk about the Cowboys versus that right now, and we think the Cowboys are getting better, obviously, but the Cowboys, that all of their receivers, everyone that's caught a pass is on pace for only 3,012 yards and 16 touchdowns. So you guys got to – that's some context there. That defense, you know, Chidobe Awuzie, I don't know how he could have played it better, Tom.
I saw passes where he was in perfect position. He was – almost getting there too early. He was on the receiver like glue, and Stafford was putting it in a place where it was just the receiver could didn't get to it. It was just pinpoint passing.
Yeah, he was amazing.
Meanwhile, Byron Jones is getting the Dion or Revis treatment.
I know. We're just not going to pass on Byron. I mean,
yeah,
they didn't
we're
even. They
only
threw
alone.
One ball his way.
Well, that was not considered a target his direction either.
Yeah, yeah.
It was stunning that all of a sudden this guy that was being used as a safety, it's like, okay, let's make him back for a cornerback and see how he does this year. Four game season, Matthew Stafford, who is definitely top 10, maybe top 5 quarterback in the league, is saying, no, I don't think so.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, like, and it's not like, you know, the one thing that you can say about the Cowboys, they don't get interceptions. They need to fix that because they have zero, you know, for the whole year. Yeah. But But Byron, just nobody's throwing on Byron. I mean, it's like Chris Richard is just every single day probably in Marinelli's office and being like, and Will McClay, and you guys thought he was a safety. Jeez.
Yeah.
Jeez, yeah. You people, you know, just,
yes.
It's crazy. It's crazy.
I would.
Yeah. I mean, I would too. If I was Chris Richard, I'd be like, hey, remember when you guys thought he was a safety?
Yeah.
We
need to give a quick nod to DeMarcus Lawrence. He had an outstanding game.
Yeah. And he manufactured pressure, Tom.
Yeah.
Because they weren't getting much.
And people are saying, like, well, nobody else on the defensive line did anything.
Oh, no.
That's wrong.
Yeah.
Tyrone Crawford had some big plays.
Stunts and twists by Tyrone Crawford were awesome.
And that was – they were setting up what was happening with DeMarcus.
Yeah.
And Taco Charlton did not have a bad game.
Mm-hmm.
The new guy, I can't remember. Dorrance Armstrong.
Yeah.
Had a couple of nice plays in relief. The line was doing all right. I think somebody – who got hurt, though?
On the line?
Yeah.
You know – no, it wasn't – was it Antoine Woods again?
Yeah, I think Woods got nicked up again little bit. Yeah,
nicked up again.
But
Daniel Ross
They have a solution for that.
Yeah, yeah. They're getting David Irving back this week, y'all.
Yeah. This could be interesting.
And even if, yep. You know, Tom, even if David Irving just plays, you know, I don't see him, you know, they're not going to throw him to the Wolves with, you know, 45, like, or playing all the defensive snaps, I would say. But I still think that they can use him effectively.
But they need to get him out there.
Oh, yeah.
With Lawrence. Mm-hmm. And Randy Gregory, even though he didn't show up on the stats sheet, was not having a bad game from what I've heard.
No, which is better than what he did the week before that, because there were times when he was saw on tape against Seattle where he looked like he was just getting lazy because he wasn't winning.
Yeah, but now I think he's starting to get back into it. You got to remember, the guy came in right away and then got a concussion, so it's taking him a while to get going. And Leighton Van Der Esch.
Oh, my gosh.
Thank goodness. They took him.
Yes. I mean, everyone is eating crow right now, and they're doing it happily.
Yes.
Because Leighton Van Der Esch, and you know, someone even asked, like, why isn't Leighton playing middle linebacker and Jalen playing the will? Well, this is why. Jalen has better instincts right now than Leighton Van Der Esch does. So Jalen needs to be the mic because he can line everybody up and get people in position to make plays. And in a 4-3 scheme like the Cowboys, that you funnel things to the will linebacker. That's why Sean Lee always has a ton of tackles. Part of it's on himself, but because he's just a monster. But the other is also look at Leighton Van Der Esch. He was like second in tackle, or he was fourth.
He was second
in tackles.
Or third.
Yeah, he was fourth in tackles.
Chidobe, I know, was ahead of him.
Yeah,
and I think I can't remember who the other guy was, but that was Lawrence, Chidobe, somebody, and then Leighton.
Yeah,
and that's. The linebackers didn't have to carry a huge load because Detroit's not a big running team.
No. They stopped running very quickly when they saw how the Cowboys were gashing them there. They started passing because that's what they do best. But I will say one last thing about the receiving there. You know, as good as the Lions receivers were, Tom, I find it interesting that the Lions receivers were averaging, and this is with Golden Tate having two like 40-plus yard touchdown runs. The Lions were averaging 12.8 yards per reception, and the Cowboys were averaging 15.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that was pretty cool. You know, like
I told you, there were four long passes.
Yeah, there was four long passes. I mean, three of them made that next gen list and stuff. But you know, another thing that, you know, because we're probably going to go a little longer than 40 minutes today, because we do got to talk a little bit about the Texans.
Yes.
We got to give some credit to the kicker.
Yes.
We have to.
Go ahead and speak on it. Yeah, can't say right now that it was the right decision to move on from Dan Bailey.
Yeah.
But at the moment, it sure isn't the wrong one.
It's like what Jerry had me in stitches this morning on the radio when he said, Steven, he said, right when that kick was about to happen, Steven punched me in the arm and said, if he misses this kick, we're in South America. you understand, Dad? If he missed, which kind of tells you that, like, maybe Steven was thinking, maybe we shouldn't get rid of Dan Bailey so much, and they were like, let's save some money, and maybe Steven was like, I know I'm about saving money, but maybe not this time.
And I think that really is about, they're worried about Dan Bailey's durability.
They're worried about his health on the kickoff. It's really,
he seems to have faded at the end of the last couple of seasons.
Yeah.
And the other thing that I love about that is, what other owner is going to do that? They're going to run their GM to South America. Only with the Cowboys do the people that own the team take the heat for that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And that to me is just that. That is why I am never going to be as down on Jerry Jones as some people are.
Yeah, exactly, because he does take the heat.
Yes.
He takes it. He says, okay, I'm going to be the GM. That means I'm going to get the heat. I'm in. I'll take it. No problem.
Okay, yeah.
So let's get into, here in our last couple of minutes here, let's get into the Texans that are coming in.
Yes, that's the most, well, we're going down
yeah,
there.
We're going there for Sunday Night Football, which I think that NBC wishes that they had that choice back.
Yeah, which is, by the way, the most one-sided rivalry in the National Football League, because it only exists down in Houston.
Yeah, it really does.
Nobody in Dallas cares about the Texans.
No, and you know what? The Texans were one of those teams that I did not think that the Cowboys were going to be able to get the win against this year, because I felt like the Texans would be very, very good. But you look at what they're doing, and you see, well, man, they can't protect the quarterback. They just can't protect Deshaun Watson, and I think Deshaun Watson is a great young quarterback. They just can't protect him.
Yeah. Now, we've seen this story play out, because the Seahawks couldn't protect Russell Wilson until they did.
Mm-hmm.
But, there's a lot of things going on, and I think that's not going to happen the same way. And
They need their other defensive linemen to step up, Tom, because in the last couple of weeks we get Lawrence is stepping up, but he needs the other guys to step back up like they were before.
Yes.
Yeah, and I think like Tyrone Crawford deserves credit, because Crawford has been a steady rock and allowing Lawrence to get free and make these sacks. But other guys from the ends, I'm talking to Taco, you started off hot, Randy Gregory, what's going on here, guys? Get it together.
Yeah, and I think it's going to be a nice test. It's going to be a very interesting game coming off of a very close, tight win.
Yeah.
The one thing the Cowboys need to do now is have a really comfortable win.
They need that. Yeah.
And I was looking today, old friend of the blog, Patrick Kahn, put up a very interesting chart that showed how the Dallas defense and the Houston offense and vice versa compared.
Mm-hmm.
The Houston defense is their weakness.
Yeah.
The Dallas offense has been its weakness.
Mm-hmm.
The Dallas defense has been its strength. The Houston offense has been its strength. We're going strength against strength and weakness against weakness.
Yeah.
And it looks like what's really interesting is that their passing defense is much weaker than their rushing. They're really strong against the run, but they're like bottom four against the pass kind of stuff.
Yeah. They are. On offense, what they can do is they can run the ball. They are sixth in attempts, ninth in yards, but they can't score with running the ball. They're 18th there. In passing, they are 11th in yards, and they are 14th in attempts, so right around middle of the league. But the thing is that they are good at – their offense is good at field position, or their special teams is good at field position, because they average starting at their own 32-yard line. And they average holding the opponent to its own 24-yard line. And the Cowboys definitely can't have that happen. And they need to do what they did last week and get some short fields to keep things going. There was the receiving, like the passing game could get maybe even a little bit more improvement in this game. But the Cowboys need to also understand that they have some pretty good receivers in Houston too. So Byron Jones is probably going to have to be on your top guy there, he's going to have to be there on, on oh my gosh, DeAndre Hopkins, yeah, and then Will Fuller, Chidobe Awuzie will be on him. You know, they've really got to tighten that secondary up because safety's been an issue, and getting beat over the top in the last couple of games has been. Yeah. They gotten three big plays.
You can't ignore Kiki Kute either.
Yeah, Kiki Kute, no, he's pretty good too. They can pass the ball. They are. Yeah. You know, like in the middle of the league right there, which is more than the Cowboys can say
What's really it seems a little incredible, though, is they only carry five wide receivers.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, but they know which receivers they want to keep, you know. They know which receivers they want to carry, and that's why the Cowboys need, you know, they're still kind of figuring those things out a little bit. They did, you know, some tailoring in this last game, but definitely need to get a little bit better. With their receivers. So, yeah, I mean, we went a little bit long today, but Cowboys face off against the Houston Texans. It's going to be, like Tom said, it's going to be weakness against weakness, strength against strength, see what happens. The Texans are struggling, even though we thought that they were a pretty good team. Tom, you got any last words before we sign off after the victory the Cowboys had over the Lions?
Just, it's a lot more fun.
Yeah, exactly. It's a lot more fun being 2-2 than it would have been being 1-3. So, guys, we want you to take care. We really appreciate you joining us. Thank you for listening again to the Brews and the Boys podcast. We are an official podcast of Blogging the Boys and SB Nation through the Vox Media Podcast Network and Shui Media. Look out for our Apple and Android links on any of our social media platforms. Follow him at Tom Ryle BTB. Follow me at Mr. Sizemore. Remember to leave us a review in iTunes if you can. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram at Brews and the Boys. And check bloggingtheboys.com for updates on all things Dallas Cowboys. Have a great night, Cowboys Nation. You earned this win. Well, Dak and Zeke earned it, but you can have it too. And we will see you next time.
Brews and the Boys is produced by Shui Media and hosted by Michael Sizemore and Tom Ryle. For more, visit brewsandtheboys.com.
Hello, I'm Spencer Hall from SB Nation, and I want to tell you about my new show, It Seems Smart. It Seems Smart is a show about people doing things that, for some reason or another, seem smart at the time. Those things might include doing a little cocaine and driving a bike up a mountain. Or, I don't know, maybe racing 100 miles per hour across the country in the middle of the night with no one's permission. Or even stealing a bat from an umpire's room in a Major League Baseball park. Check it out, and if you like it, tell a friend. I'm Spencer Hall. Don't do anything smart.